I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Monday, the 8th of June, all things political coming up this hour, and we have a lot of political items to discuss. Hillary Rodham Clinton's poll numbers have fallen. The Washington Post ABC News poll last week showed more Americans said they held an unfavorable opinion of Clinton than favorable, 49% to 45%, and among independents, 55% unfavorable to 39%. We have spent a lot of time talking about the Republican field, but we'll look at the latest Democrat to enter the race, Lincoln Chafee, who is criticizing Clinton for her vote to authorize the war in Iraq. Is that issue over now, or will that be an important issue as you vote? Senator Bernie Sanders is attracting these really large crowds, bigger crowds than candidates of either party. We'll ask what all of that is about. We have a couple issues of very questionable police actions to talk about today. The Texas police officer suspended. You've probably seen that video showing him breaking up a pool party in an extremely aggressive manner, including drawing his gun. There are issues of race, many are saying, involved in this. A grand jury has indicted a South Carolina police officer in the death of Walter Scott. We'll also be talking about the G7 summit that's currently taking place and any other issue you want to talk about for all things political. Our guest this hour has joined us before, and she is Goldie Taylor. Goldie is a veteran opinion writer, a public policy analyst, cable news contributor. She has been on many local and nationally syndicated TV and radio programs. She is known as a really prominent person on issues of gun violence, social justice, marriage and wage equality, health care. We'll talk about that. The Supreme Court is about to make a decision on the Affordable Care Act and environmental stewardship. She has written for The Daily Beast, Salon, Atlanta Journal-Constitution, Huffington Post, St. Louis Post-Dispatch, The Griot, CNN.com, MSNBC.com, and many other publications. And she is the author of several books. We'll be welcoming phone calls for her. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@WPR.org. Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show, and we're on Twitter as well, and that's at K Dunn Show. Let's start with Hillary Clinton, and the question I ask you to start off the hour is, do you think that she is vulnerable? Is she vulnerable, as a Washington Post article suggested last week, to a grassroots contender who better captures the party's liberal soul? Goldie, hello. Thanks very much for being with us.
Well, thank you for having me, Kathleen. It's good to be with you again.
Yeah, it's great to have you here. Let's start with Hillary Clinton. I think those poll numbers must be concerning to the Clinton campaign. 49% unfavorable ratings, unfavorable opinion, 45% favorable. And among independents, it's 55 to 39. Meanwhile, Bernie Sanders is drawing these huge crowds, and we're getting more entries into the Democratic race. Is this just temporary? Will her popularity surge again later, do you think?
You know, well, I think there are two things at play here. As we all know, Hillary Clinton is one of the most, you know, widely known candidates in this race, or could enter this race. And so she's going to have name identification with households across America, you know, really like no other candidate. With that comes some negative feeling about policies that she may have put forward, you know, as a U.S. Senator, about how she may have conducted herself as Secretary of State, and even as First Lady. And so those things are really sort of par for course. But on the question of whether these numbers mean that she is vulnerable, well, every candidate is vulnerable, but not Hillary Clinton in this race.
So she will eventually walk away with it. Why is it then that Bernie Sanders is the one who's drawing these huge crowds?
Bernie Sanders is an exciting candidate for many reasons. Although the Democratic nomination is something that he may not be able to capture, he will be able to capture the hearts and minds of so many progressives, you know, on issues like marriage and wage equality, on issues of health care, on issues of taxation. He's going to be able to capture attention really like no other Democratic candidate, and really move the conversation for Hillary Clinton. And so her campaign will be watching Bernie Sanders, listening to his stump speeches, watching how they resonate, and then they'll begin adjusting her platform really to align more closely with that. She's going to want to capture the Bernie Sanders voter, and there is a strong Sanders vote out there. I'll make no mistake about it. But she's going to want to have those very same people coalesce around her once she captures the nomination. And so she's going to be right in terms of being in tune with it, watching it closely, and seeing how it resonates.
Mm-hmm. Is the issue, does Sanders' popularity, Goldie, do you think, mean that the issue that is really of concern to Americans right now is this inequality?
Well, absolutely. I mean, Bernie Sanders is really talking about what the American dream used to mean and what it didn't mean for so many people and what it doesn't mean for so many people today. And that we have really sort of burned some of those bridges into the middle class with our policies. And so Bernie Sanders is talking an awful lot about those kinds of disparities. He's talking about, you know, how much we owe seniors in this country and how much we owe our young people, conversely, in this country, that we owe them opportunities that were afforded, you know, to generations before us that aren't, you know, necessarily afforded today. And so Bernie Sanders is, you know, even being a U.S. senator, speaking a level of truth to power that I don't think progressives have been able to witness for some time.
Yeah, I think you're right. And plus, he's got this image, doesn't he? You know, his shirt isn't really pressed very well, and his hair's kind of wild in the wind, and he's just up there. You have to sort of trust what he's saying, because he really does appear to say things from the heart.
He really wasn't made for this, was he?
No, he wasn't.
You know,
that's why we like him.
Disheveled hair and unkempt suits and that right. kind of thing. He really wasn't made for this kind of thing. But what Bernie Sanders has done has been able to strike a he's one of us chord. And I think that's what's drawing, you know, really so much attention when you look at the crowd that he's drawing in New Hampshire and Iowa and other places. And you don't see that on either side of the aisle.
Right.
I mean, I think you saw Ted Cruz stand up before a sort of makeshift audience of students who kind of had to be there. No one has to go to a Bernie Sanders rally.
You're right.
They go because they want to. They go because they believe in him.
They don't even have free donuts, huh?
They don't even have great donuts.
And so
that's going to be a real challenge for Hillary Clinton, you know, even as she, you know, step by step, state by state, you know, marches toward capturing this nomination. And that's not saying that we don't have, you know, maybe another candidate somewhere in the wings waiting to get in. We just don't see him or her just now. Barack Obama was just entering the race around this time in 2007 and just really sort of gaining credibility as a candidate. And so who knows what can unfold.
Right.
But as the field stands today, Hillary Clinton is the likely nominee from the Democratic Party. Bernie Sanders is going to be that personality that really sets the tone of the race. Sets some of these issues and really sort of, you know, brings voice to the voiceless in this.
Mm-hmm. Well, certainly Senator Barack Obama saw this Iraq vote as crucial in Iowa in 2008. The latest Democrat, Lincoln Chafee, who used to be a Republican, former Rhode Island governor and senator, is making his centerpiece, at least for the moment, her 2002 vote to authorize the war in Iraq. Is that something people still care about, Goldie?
I think people care about it to the extent that many, many American lives were lost in wars that, as Barack Obama said, should never have been waged. And so I think that, yes, it is important to people, but I think what is more important is the policy of foreign policy that we're going to have going forward. You know, what are we doing in the Middle East that may, you know, sort of destabilize the region? Are our policies really having the kinds of outcomes that we're looking to have? And the answer really is no thus far.
Right.
And so the candidate who's able to really articulate not the vision backward, but the vision going forward, I think is the one who's going to capture the conversation. And that remains to be seen. Lincoln Chafee said a lot of things during his open press conference, but, you know, he spent a lot of time talking about the metric system. I think he's going to want to align his talking points, align his platform more closely on things that resonate with, you know, what charts a vision for the country, you know, rather than, you know, maybe metric systems and maybe what happened during the Iraq War.
Right. I agree with you that somebody, and I don't know if there's anybody doing this now, needs to enunciate what is the way forward in the Middle East. It's a god-awful mess. Who is best at presenting a plan now? Anybody?
it's a mess, and we haven't heard many or any of the candidates really articulate what their vision would be. I think Ben Carson said, you know, he would waste no time in putting military action against ISIS. That's not necessarily a foreign policy, a cohesive foreign policy. Whether or not we do that, you know, sort of remains to be seen, if it's in our interest and in the interest of the region to do so. And so all of these are very dynamic decisions that have to really be sort of married up into a cohesive policy. I haven't heard, I don't know if you have, but I haven't heard a single candidate begin to talk about those, in a comprehensive way.
No, I haven't either. There was talk, this whole death of Vice President Biden's son and the funeral and the president's eulogy was so moving. I think that so many Americans were touched by that, because here's this powerful leader who has had these enormous, enormous tragedies in his life, and to just see the anguish on his face, I can't imagine that he's got it in him to run for president now. Do you?
You know, I don't really see. I mean, there had been an awful lot of talk about whether or not Joe Biden would enter the 2016 race. I don't see that in the offing. Now, yes, he's gone through an awful lot of personal tragedy, yet he has placed himself up for public service again and again. That is the way in which he has chosen to live out his service. But whether or not he steps into this sort of remains to be seen. I'm not betting on it, not necessarily because he lost his son in this instance, but because I think his service to this country may be well capped about now, and whether or not he's a viable candidate for 2016, he's run before. Whether or not he's a viable candidate for 2016, you know, I don't know that there's a pathway to victory for him.
Yeah. Martin O'Malley seems to be getting not very much attention. To many, he's a fairly attractive candidate. He rallies against those who have and wants to comfort those who have not. But he doesn't seem to be noticed very much. Why is that?
Well, I think it comes down to money, to name recognition, to the ability to sort of capture the imagination of audiences as he sort of tolls about the Sunday afternoon or Sunday morning talk shows. And so I think the fire in the belly may be missing for him, number one. But two, a groundswell of support, like you see with Bernie Sanders, is missing from Martin O'Malley. Today, he seems to be a little more than, you know, another television candidate. I think we've got 15 or 16 of those on the Republican side.
Right.
Of the
aisle. We could have as many as 20 Republican candidates. Isn't that something?
As many as 20. It is, for political reporters, it's boom. I think that they're certainly going to have their plates full, over this next year and a half or so, in terms of chasing down these candidates, really, from state to state. But I think as we get beyond New Hampshire, and certainly as we get beyond South Carolina, you're going to see that field begin to winnow down and see it be around probably five or six candidates. And you're going to see a leader or two emerge from that pack. And then you'll see the real fight for the Republican nomination. I don't think you're seeing that now. I think what you're seeing now is sort of a whale-heeled book tour. You're seeing a speaking circuit. You're seeing people sort of, gain more prominence from what they can do with maybe some of these cable talk shows. But what you're not seeing is a real GOP primary play out just yet. We'll see that after we get beyond Iowa, New Hampshire, and probably South Carolina.
We're going to welcome phone calls. We started with what's going on with the Democrats. And, I'm interested in your thoughts about Hillary Clinton. It's interesting to me that those poll numbers came out that show that she is not viewed as favorably as she was when the announcement first came out. That people, I think somebody said that she's no longer, actually it was somebody who's playing a role in the Jeb Bush campaign, who was saying that she's no longer being viewed as a very good Secretary of State, that there's something else at play. So her numbers, we don't think of her as Secretary of State when we think of her as a candidate, that Americans' views of her are not as stellar as they used to be. There also are other issues we'll be talking about. The Supreme Court will be ruling any day now on the Affordable Care Act. The president is saying that the Supreme Court should not have accepted the Obamacare challenge. That could really turn the whole system upside down, so we can talk a bit about that. There were more really disturbing images of police this weekend. On Friday, the McKinney Police Department, not too far from Dallas, were called to a pool party at the Craig Ranch North Community Pool near the Dallas-Fort Worth area over reports of a fight. And what we saw were police officers just yelling these obscenities at these young people, pushing a 14-year-old girl to the ground who was calling for her mom. Everybody who was there was African-American, and evidently, I don't know if this is true or not, but many people were saying that people were called because these young people were crashing a pool party. They were not from the neighborhood, but the police response to this was just, it was hard to watch. We, of course, can talk about that, and a grand jury has indicted the South Carolina police officer in the death of Walter Scott, so we will look at that issue as well. And others, our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655, email talk at WPR.org, Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show, and we're on Twitter at K Dunn Show. Our guest is Goldie Taylor, a veteran opinion writer, public policy analyst, and cable news contributor. And she got her start as a staff writer at the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, and has been working as a journalist, political, and also communication strategist for 25 years. To you, momentarily, this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Two phone calls for all things political, and we start with Pat in Richland Center. Hi, Pat.
Well, hey, good afternoon. Thanks for taking my call right away.
Sure.
That's pretty nice.
It is nice, isn't it?
Kathleen, I know, I think it was last week, the same show I called in. I'm going to say essentially the same thing, except try to phrase it a little different. In light of 08, the way that the Democrat primary voters rejected Hillary, and now it should be pretty obvious to everybody, and I don't know why no talking heads will acknowledge this, that Wall Street wants Hillary. And the Democrat primary voters that, you know, who value some fairness, they want Bernie. I mean, why would anybody think that all of a sudden after these years that people would start on the Democrats would like Hillary? She's whoa, you know. What is she? Do you remember 08, Kathleen?
Oh, we were in the thick of it. I remember it well. We went to Iowa for the caucuses. Yeah.
Remember how she was pre-anointed? Nobody's
yes,
going to have
was.
Touch her at all. And
mm-hmm.
She was even on O'Reilly late in the primary in order to drum up Republican voters. I mean, the establishment was doing everything in their power to get the Democrat primary voters to buy this woman.
Mm-hmm. Well, there was something, though, Goldie, what about that time? Because there was something just extraordinary about Senator Barack Obama in those days, too, that there was, you know, a star was born during that primary in Iowa, and she had some successes after Iowa, but he was the one who people paid attention to, his oratory, his ideas at that time. Is Pat making a good point here that we could see a repeat with somebody like Bernie Sanders in 2016?
You know, the opportunity for a repeat is certainly here. For the right candidate. I don't think that we've seen him or her really just yet, but the caller is right. Whether or not, you know, we've got a candidate who's going to really take a strong stand on Wall Street, you know, in Hillary Clinton, you know, seems a little bit far-fetched, you know, given the ties that she and her husband have had, you know, historically over the years. She's going to have to come out pretty strongly. On some of those topics, she's going to have to sort of embody her inner Elizabeth Warren, really, and do it in a convincing way.
Mm-hmm.
And I am not so certain that can be done for her, but at the same time, I'm not so certain that it's going to be the thing that keeps her from winning this primary. Unless and until we see another candidate emerging that speaks to those issues, but also appears more electable, than a Bernie Sanders. I think that she's going to wind up walking away with this. And, you know, that's kind of probably the cynic in me talking, because you always want to root for the candidate who's out there spouting their, you know, what you think are the right ideas. But on the other hand, you know, I'm a vote counter by trade. And if Bernie Sanders gets no more than 15 or 20% in a place like Iowa, and certainly in a place like South Carolina, it's just going to be tough for him.
Well, that would be an extraordinary development. Why do you think she lost in 2008?
You know, I think, you know, in 2008, I and maybe some others like me were a bit put off by what we believed was a coronation, by what we believed was a it's my turn kind of campaign. It seems to me that she's running a bit differently this time around, although, you know, the days and weeks ahead, you know, will sort of bear that out or not. But I think many people were sort of pushed back on the notion that we somehow owed someone the White House. And so there was a bit of resentment. Barack Obama certainly picked up on that when he entered the race and really sort of made a go of it. You know, does that opportunity exist this time? Sure it does. But again, you know, where is that candidate who really can embrace and take advantage of that? And I just don't see them emerging just yet.
Thanks, Pat, for your call. Nice to hear from you again. Steve in Madison, hi.
Hi. Thank you for the call, for allowing me to speak. I agree with the previous individual. I think Hillary's got baggage all the way back from Arkansas that could be used against her. I watch Senator Sanders on Tom on Democracy Now, and I'm sure plenty of other people have, and like them. And I also think that democracy, calling himself a democratic socialist, is actually an asset. But I would ask whether or not it's possible before the primary, when he speaks with her and she criticizes the fact that he is a democratic socialist, that he chooses Senator Warren as simply a Democrat. I'll let you go.
He chooses her as his vice presidential. I don't know about that ticket. That would be an extraordinary ticket. Do you think that she would? I don't think she'll say yes to that. Do you, Goldie?
No, I don't think she'll say yes to it. I think her opportunity to say yes was probably for the Democratic primary.
Yes.
You know, if there were a candidate out there today who could emerge and give Hillary Clinton a real risk, probably Hillary is probably Elizabeth Warren. I think she'll stay away from talking about Bernie Sanders as a Democratic socialist. I think she'll stay away from that language because at the end of the day, if she does win this nomination, and that appears likely, she's going to want Bernie Sanders' voters to coalesce behind her and turn out on Election Day. She really can't win without them. They're going to do the real work in terms of organizing state by state and be a great help to that. And so I don't think she can alienate him in that way. At the same time, if he were to capture, you know, by some incredible miracle, capture the Democratic nomination, his Republican opponents won't waste any time using it. Won't waste any time using it. And I think, you know, for many progressives, it may be a good label, but for, you know, this nation, which is still a bit, you know, center and center right, it may be the kind of label that dooms his candidacy ultimately.
Mm-hmm. Is there a certain age, do you think, when age is a liability? He is older than Hillary Clinton is. He would be the oldest person in the race, should he, by some stretch of the imagination, become the nominee at 73. Is there an age where people will say, ooh, you're just too old?
You know, that's always an odd argument to me, because when you hear it, it typically comes from Republicans who elected Ronald Reagan twice. And so it's always a bit perplexing to me when I hear people talk about the age of a Bernie Sanders or even of a Hillary Clinton in that way. And so for me, you know, I want the most qualified candidate. Of course, I if they're older, of course, I want to make sure that they're healthy, just as I want to make sure that a 45-year-old is healthy coming into the office. But I think the questions about someone's age have little to do with policy or character or merit. It has everything to do, you know, with, you know, sort of trying to strip away, you know, any support they might have. It's a cheap attack.
Thanks, Steve, for your call. Carl in Madison, hi.
Yes, I'm feeling elderly myself just listening to the list of this cavalcade of stories from across the nation, across the world. And I'd love to see an old wise man like Bernie Sanders in the White House shepherd us back to the kind of America we can become. But my question was, and for your guest, taking off the media hat of, you know, this 20 Republican candidates being a boon for reporters, as a species or as a culture, are we capable of processing so much information, particularly when so much of it redlines into the area of crisis? You know, what do we do about the people trying to travel across the Mediterranean? What do we do about ISIS? What do we do about the huge divide in America right now in terms of where we need to go? I work on issues of climate change, but it is really hard to get traction on an issue because there are just so many of them. Are we capable of processing this much information at the depths that we need to get where we need to go on all these different subjects that really compel us to act as a populace, as a grassroots movement, whatever it is that's going to turn that tide? Can we get there from here?
That's an interesting question.
In a word, nope. I don't think that we're able, and we've demonstrated that we're not able to process so much information. We're not able, you know, we've got a very short attention span, this American electorate does. And at the end of the day, we'll focus on, you know, two or three, maybe four, if we're lucky, of what we believe are our most critical issues. But they may not, in the end of the day, be the most critical issues. They'll be the ones that the candidates and their PACs convinced us that are the most critical issues. Those will be, you know, really the priorities. I'd love to see a candidate emerge at the top of the ticket that really did a lot of great work in terms of environmental stewardship, who talked about green issues in a meaningful way, who believes, you know, that climate change is a real crisis. It would be an extraordinary thing to happen. But the truth is, you know, you've got, you know, big money PACs and candidates out there who are doing everything they can not to have issues like that come to the forefront, that they'd rather deal, you know, in the politics of fear, in the politics of resentment and alienation. And so I think that's what you're going to see from, you know, when you've got, you know, 15 or 20 Republican candidates, you know, out there running for the same job, that the one who gets the hottest mic the quickest is the one who, you know, fans the flames of fear. And unfortunately, that's how our politics seem to have devolved. Yes, it would be a boon for political journalists. I hear there's a shortage in Florida right now. They can't find quite enough journalists to do the job down there. They believe it's going to be such, you know, an important state. But will it be a boon to the everyday voter, to the everyday American? Well, heavens no. It won't be a boon to us. Even if you have sort of this flurry of reporters on the job, even they are going to begin to coalesce around two, three, or four issues and leave the others off the table.
Yeah, and he is so right, Carl. These issues are of such moral importance, too. They just require all kinds of conversation and then action, which we are so reluctant to take. Thank you, Carl, very much for the call. We had, I'm sure that you've seen that footage from this outside this pool in McKinney near Dallas-Fort Worth with these teenagers who evidently, I don't know if they were invited to the party or they weren't. They convinced me that they had been invited to the party, many of them, and somebody called the police. And the response was just, it's really hard to watch. These police officers just went after these kids. Goldie, what do you think?
Yeah, you know, I was sitting in church when this story began to unfold, and I knew that it would be something that would be a serious talker for our website at Blue Nation Review. I had to get up and sort of tip out almost mid-sermon to begin to take in and process what had unfolded. And the story seems to go that these students were invited by others and given guest passes to come to a private community pool. subdivision, and that there were residents who were unhappy with this. They said there were too many black children, too many black teenagers there, accused them of rabble-rousing or being unruly. And so there were allegedly some racial epithets tossed. Another student who happened to be white objected, and a fight ensued. And suddenly you've got 12 police officers on the scene. The difficult thing about this for me is not that the police were called because of a fight. Police should have been called if people are actively fighting in the street. What was hard for me was watching children who look a lot like my own children, watching them being chased down and aggressively handcuffed, wrestled to the ground, dragged by their braids, chased with a gun, to watch all of this happen because someone said they were someplace that they should not be. And so the hardest part of all of this for me. And then at the end, I think one person was arrested who was an adult. He was arrested allegedly for interfering with a police officer's work. But no one else was arrested and charged with a crime. The police decided that no other crimes have been committed. Then why all the handcuffs? Why all the detaining? Why pulling out the gun? You know, what justifies the kind of response that they took? And then on the other hand, in the aftermath of all of this, residents of this very same community, today they are thanking the police officers for that response. Today they are hanging signs on the pool saying, we appreciate you, McKinney Police Department, for keeping our neighborhood safe. And so you find in this community that they want that kind of policing, that they want the kind of policing that would be brutish, that would violate the civil and human rights of young black children, in an effort to keep them out of their neighborhood.
And yet we do have a grand jury indicting the South Carolina police officer in the death of Walter Scott.
We do. I went to North Charleston some months ago for the wake and funeral for Walter Scott.
Oh, you did?
Had an opportunity to walk the pathway where Walter Scott and Officer Michael Steger ran, stood in the spot where he was shot. It was a tough experience for me, but I got an opportunity to get to know the community, the people, the voices on the ground who, you know, this is unfolding in their neighborhood. And one of the things that I heard that was most, you know, sort of striking to me was almost everyone expected him to be charged once the video was released, and almost everyone expected that there would be a grand jury indictment because the video was so plain. Almost no one believes that he will be convicted. As one former state senator said to me, Bakari Sellers said in an interview to me, he said, all it takes, Goldie, are 2, 3, maybe 4 jurors who side with that police officer. And that's conceivable down here in South Carolina. And I think I said to him, that's conceivable almost anywhere.
Yeah, I was about to say the same thing. It's one thing after another, after another, after another. We have a huge problem with race in this country at this time, don't we?
We do, but I'm not one to say that it has increased or that it is any worse. I think that we're seeing more of it because of the prevalence of cell phone technology, because of the advent of social media networks where people can now talk to people that they've never met about issues that they happen to see on television or see out there on video in some other ways or hear on the radio, reading the newspaper. And so we now have the ability to share more information. And so, you know, we're seeing it sort of rise to the public fore once again. But, you know, I'm one of those people who believes that the civil rights movement never ended, that when it kicked off in post-Reconstruction era, that we are in a third wave of it today, that what we call the civil rights movement of the 50s and 60s was really a second wave, and that people are in the streets again today. You know, because these issues never really stopped. Just because there were no cameras did not mean that young black boys and girls were not dying at the hands of police officers unjustifiably. Just because there were no police cameras, police body cameras or cell phone cameras, does not mean that black children weren't being chased away from all-white swimming pools over these last several decades. And so it isn't that these things are new in their occurrence. They've always happened. The problem is that no one ever believed us. And now that there are cell phone cameras, there are still people who just don't believe us.
Right. Our number is 800-486-8655, and you're listening to All Things Political here on the Ideas Network. Our guest is Goldie Taylor. She's a veteran opinion writer, public policy analyst, cable news contributor. She is on many radio programs and TV programs and has written several books. She writes for the Daily Beast, Salon, Atlanta Journal-Constitution, Huffington Post, St. Louis Post-Dispatch, The Griot, CNN, MSNBC, Essence, Ebony Magazine, and the list goes on. And we're talking about, well, we were talking about what happened in Texas and South Carolina before that. Spending a good chunk of the hour looking at Hillary Clinton and her challengers, Lincoln Chafee, the latest to announce last week, why Bernie Sanders is drawing really very large crowds. But she still has the money, and she's got 9 field offices in Iowa, and are the chances pretty good that she will be the candidate? What about the major issues? I think Carl from Madison brought up an excellent point that we're really facing some crisis situations in the world in terms of immigration, in terms of global warming. Are we going to see really substantial discussion of those issues in this presidential campaign? What would you add to that list? Let's go to Ned. Oh, did I give you the number? 800-486-8655. Lines are open for you right now. Or talk at WPR.org. Ned is our next caller. Hi, Ned.
Hi. I'm very familiar with the Democratic Party, having been a delegate to a national convention in the past, and I've worked hard for them in many elections. I think we need to look at reality and idealism. Certainly, I do like Bernie Sanders' stance on the issues, but there's no way in all the world that he is going to be the nominee. And the reason is, number one, he's an independent candidate that now is aligned, you know, with the Democratic Party. He certainly is strong on the issues and drawing big crowds. But the issue is, let's look at where they have things in common. They have many things in common, Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders. Minimum wage, let's say, or Obamacare, or you name it, I'd say out of 10 issues, they agree on 9 out of 10. And I think we're looking at the 1 out of 10 where they differ, which the media loves to do, and expounding on that 1 out of 10 and ignoring the 9 out of 10 where they agree. And so I think it's time for Democrats to realize that the candidate that is going to win is Hillary Clinton. I did not support her in 2008. I was supporting Barack Obama, so I'm not one of these lifelong Hillary Clinton people, but I am a realist. And in reality, Hillary Clinton is going to win the nomination, and I think she'll win the general election as well.
Thanks, Ned, for your call. Goldie.
But I think as Democrats, and especially as progressives, we've got a duty, really, to help move the issues towards those that we find most critical, that we have an opportunity, I think, to impact Hillary Clinton's candidacy and her platform, her policies. And we shouldn't shirk away from doing that because we think she may be the de facto nominee, or because we believe that, you know, her road to the White House is probably a bit more smooth, you know, than some other candidate. I think we ought to take that opportunity. I think that onus really is, it really is on us. And so I think he's right. I you know, I was a Barack Obama supporter in 2008, and don't mind telling you, in 2012. But, you know, Hillary Clinton may well be the candidate that, you know, we have to contend with here. But if I'm Bernie Sanders, I think we all have an opportunity to be a Bernie Sanders. I think we all have an opportunity to put pressure on that campaign and on that candidate to be a candidate in a campaign that represents our voices. I don't think, you know, we can afford to miss the opportunity to do that.
Mm-hmm. He talked about there being the same on a lot of the issues. Maybe I'm putting too much weight on this Washington Post poll, but it's the first one that comes out that shows where she is vulnerable. And she may have at this point a lot of the same messages, but this poll showed that 52% said she was not honest and trustworthy, which seems to me as though if you've got a message about minimum wage or about inequality or voter ID or whatever, you have to be seen as honest and trustworthy by most of the people you're speaking to, don't you?
You do. You do. But as a former political consultant, I know that the real polls matter state by state and party by party. And so what do Democrats in South Carolina, for instance, believe about Hillary Clinton? What do Democrats in Georgia or Florida or California, what do they believe about Hillary Clinton? That will determine, you know, her viability, as it were, in this Democratic primary. By the time we get to the general election, so much will be said and done about the Republican candidates, let alone the Republican nominee, that you're going to see something happen to their poll numbers nationally as well. You're going to see their negatives. You know, as more people get to know them, you're going to see their negatives drive up as well. I think you saw that, of course, with Mitt Romney, who ran twice. And so as people become more known, more prominent, and as new as prominent as a Hillary Clinton, if you can attain that, I think your negative numbers nationally do drive up. But what's really important are the state-by-state polls, intra-party polls, where we sort of understand how people feel about individual candidates. Now, here's something that I'll say about this poll also. It talks about this massive independence, that people who identify themselves as independent voters, I just don't think there are that many of them. If you really go state by state and start pulling people's voting records, people tend to vote one party. There are very few zigzaggers, as there were, in this country. And so the notion that there's going to be this huge independent swing vote and that they don't trust Hillary Clinton, I think is a falsehood, really. I think it's a myth. What I really believe is that this country is so polarized that there's such a tiny middle of people. And if you ask them to self-identify, if you ask a Democrat to self-identify, that of course they're going to say that I'm independent because that makes me feel like I survey the issues more strongly and that I just don't appear to, adhere to party. But if you go back and pull the ballots, you find that they always vote Democrat. And so I don't think people who self-identify as independents truly are. I think you really have to sort of pull their ballots and put some proof in the pudding.
More phone calls momentarily. Lines are open. Thanks, Ned, for your call. 800-486-8655. We have several Facebook comments and emails, too, which we will get to. And we'll take more of your phone calls if you'd like to join our All Things Political conversation. I gave you a number. I won't do it again. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. All right, we have a lot of Facebook comments, Goldie. Let's get to some of them. Jim emails that he doesn't believe Hillary Clinton will overcome any present problems to get the nomination. He says in 2007 she seemed like the odds-on favorite, and then her conduct as Secretary of State has been disgraceful, he said, with another war in Libya. This has angered many people. Even if she gets the nomination, he says, people will then vote for the Republicans, me included.
I think where she might fail, I don't think in necessarily crossover votes, but I think where she might fail is in terms of energizing voters to her cause, in terms of getting them to turn out. And so there are some people who may decide to stay home rather than sort of hold their nose and vote for a Republican in the race. And so I think that's where the real challenge for Hillary Clinton lies, and I think her campaign understands it. I think that's why they're reaching out to African-American voters today so heavily. The first public policy speech was about mass incarceration and over-policing of minority communities. And I think that was because she understands that there is an energy deficit, an excitement deficit for her between what happened with Barack Obama and her candidacy today. And so I think she understands that there are some deficits and she's got, you know, a year and a half or so, you know, really to work on curing those deficits. But whether or not people will make a crossover vote, that's a different notion, you know, really sort of altogether. The question is, who are you going to cross over for? Is there a candidate on the other side of the aisle that you believe more closely adheres to your values, to your goals for your community on the Republican side of the aisle? If you're a Democrat, I doubt you can say that that's true, unless you're really, I guess, going to do it out of spite. But more easily, you'll simply stay home and fold your arms.
Mm-hmm. I really wonder how much of that there's going to be, particularly if you have a Clinton-Bush race.
Oh, goodness. I think that's it would be interesting to see you know, if you had crossover vote then. But I just don't think that Jeb Bush at this moment has a clear path or clear way to victory in the Republican primary. Just as we might find Hillary Clinton as a default Democratic nominee, I don't think that Jeb Bush by any means is a default Republican nominee. Grassroots, while splintered, almost none of them are in Jeb Bush's camp.
Yeah. Robert in Richland, Virginia. Hi, Robert.
Hey, how you doing? I'm not in Richland. I'm an over truck driver driving through Wisconsin right now. But I am the previous caller said there's not a lot of crossovers. And believe it or not, there actually are, because me and my entire family used to vote a totally conservative. Now we're about as liberal can be. We actually are against Hillary Clinton based on the fact that she supports all these free trade agreements, and Bernie Sanders stands against them. And I've seen the damage that the free trade agreements have done to America ever since NAFTA. They're killing American jobs.
Goldie.
Now, that's something a bit different. That is party realignment. That is an ideological realignment, and that does happen. Happens within family, certainly happens within my family. I mean, my family voted almost purely Republican in the 60s and early 70s before, you know, we realigned as a really as a family across generations in the early 80s to become Democrat. And so party realignment among families and communities, neighborhoods, not uncommon. What is uncommon is having someone who professes to stand in one party, such as the Republican Party, one day, and on that very same day, they go and vote for a Democrat. That is the kind of swing voting that is less common than wholesale realignment.
Leah on Facebook wonders how the Clinton emails and the personal server issue will affect her.
Oh, I don't know that it's going to affect and impact her state by state. I think it is impacting this national number that you're seeing in the Washington Post in terms of a negative rating and whether or not it's trustworthy. I think it does impact that top line number. But when you get down house to house, I think people will be talking less about that and more about, you know, the bread in their pockets on election day. Whether or not they've got a job, you know, whether or not there's a great outlook for their children to go to college, whether or not their communities are safe, whether or not they feel like, you know, there's equal opportunity in America, and what pathway is there to get there.
Right.
And so I think people will be more concerned about those, what they believe are bread and butter issues, than they will be whether or not, you know, she used Gmail or Clinton mail to send her email.
Thanks, Robert. BD in Couderay. Hi.
Hi, Catherine. Hi, everybody. Hey, I just wanted to say that I don't think that there is another candidate either side that has the qualifications that Hillary Clinton does. She knows what's involved in this job, and I believe that she's always held herself up like a lady, like a good person. And I think there's just been a lot of negative publicity because everybody's afraid of her. I don't know why she wants the job at this point, because of what they're going to put her through, but I don't think that anybody has even knows what's involved in the job like she does, and I don't think they can handle it.
Goldie.
You know, I think she's got a point about a couple of things here, but most personally, I think Hillary Clinton wants voters, just like this caller, to multiply across this country because that's victory for her. Absolutely. But if I am to go and take a look back over history and look at, you know, the presidents who have inhabited this office and whether or not how qualified were they on day one, the day they were sworn in to do this job, and I just can't find another to, for better or for worse, whether you agree with her policy decisions or not, who former Secretary of State, former First Lady, former U.S. Senator, you know, all of, you know, having been on this public stage for so long and for a life in public service, I don't think you're going to find anyone who knows the issues quite as intimately as Hillary Clinton does.
Yeah.
And she won't know them because she read about them. She'll know them because she was there.
That's an interesting point.
And so I think, for better or for worse, whether you agree with her ideologically, whether you agree with her policy positions, whether you like her personally or not, you probably can't point to another U.S. president sworn in on day one with as many qualifications.
Mm-hmm. Well, Goldie, it's always a delight to speak with you. You've got really good political instincts and knowledge, and thank you very much for being with us.
I thank you for having me.
Goldie Taylor, our guest, a repeat performance. She's an opinion writer, public policy analyst, cable news contributor. She's the author of a couple books, including In My Father's House and The January Girl, and she's currently working on her third novel, Paper Gods. Thanks to K.P. Whaley for producing this hour, and to K.P. Whaley for on-air production here in our studios in downtown Milwaukee. News is coming up from National Public Radio in a very interesting second hour, so stay with us.